Welcome to today's reading of Sports Today, a one-hour reading of sports news from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday and Thursday. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Let's begin with a reading from USA Today Sports Weekly that reads, Quarterback Outlooks, Ranking Teams at the Position. This feature written by Nate Davis of USA Today. Not every NFL team is going to get a quarterback in the 2024 NFL Draft. Not all of them truly need one, even if there is a top-heavy demand that could render this draft the first ever to feature four passers taken within the first four selections. But you can bet that all 32 clubs will do their homework and weigh their options at the most important position in team sports. After all, 66 quarterbacks started an NFL game last season, Joshua Dobbs doing so for two squads. A year after, 68 had taken the first snap of at least one contest during the 2022 campaign. Hall of Fame General Manager Ron Wolf, he also happens to be the father of New England Patriots Director of Scouting, Elliot Wolf, was famously a proponent of obtaining a quarterback every year, and his son certainly needs one now. Every year, it's a goal to acquire a quarterback, whether that's draft, free agency, whatever it looks like. Seattle Seahawks general manager John Schneider, who began his career as a scout for Ron Wolf in Green Bay, said at this year's scouting combine, But yeah, this year's draft class is a cool group, a lot of variances in there, unquote. But while there is variance in need any year, it does seem like quarterback depth is becoming increasingly important in a league with a 17-game regular season and ever-increasing demands given the growing creep of international and holiday games, many of those occurring on compressed timelines. How badly does each team require help behind center? Here is a ranking of NFL teams' needs at quarterback, ranked from very low priority to high priority, ahead of the draft, starting with number 32 on the low priority list, the Kansas City Chiefs. Duh. Carson Wentz just became three-time Super Bowl MVP Patrick Mahomes' third second-string quarterback since 2022, with Ian Book and Chris Oladokun currently on hand as training camp and preseason canner fodder, with veteran Blaine Gabbert still on speed dial. But with Mahomes under contract through the year 2031, not a whole lot of reason to dabble with drafting and developing here. Number 31 in the very low priority list, the Philadelphia Eagles. Jalen Hurts is going to be around for a while, and with Will Greer, Tanner McGee, and now Kenny Pickett, probably for 2 years in the fold, little reason for general manager Howie Roseman to devote much thought to adding another slinger. Number 30 on the list, Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen is MVP caliber and under contract through the year 2028. Mitchell Trubisky is back as second stringer, probably for the next 2 seasons, and Shane Buscelli is a semi-experienced cold storage alternative. And next, number 29 in the very low priority list for new quarterbacks, the Arizona Cardinals, number 29. Kyler Murray should be back to 100% physically next season, nearly 2 years removed from his ACL tear. Behind him are a pair of young passers, Desmond Ridder coming over in a trade with Atlanta and bringing 17 NFL starts with him, and Clayton Tune getting one under his belt as a rookie in 2023. Number 28 in the low priority list, the Cleveland Browns. Joe Flacco, the 2023 Comeback Player of the Year, may be gone, but they're otherwise taking few chances given the diverse array of options if exorbitantly priced starter Deshaun Watson goes down again. Veteran reserves Jameis Winston and Tyler Huntley both have Pro Bowls on their resumes, and Dorian Thompson-Robinson remains an exciting prospect despite failing to shine in 3 starts as a rookie in 2023. With just 2 picks before round 5, little chance that GM Andrew Berry takes a flyer on another passer. Number 27 on the list, the New Orleans Saints. Their position on this list is not to suggest that they're lights out at quarterback, but they do have a full room with Derek Carr, Nathan Peterman, Kellen Mond, and Jake Haener. Even utility man Taysom Hill is still listed by the team as a quarterback. And with no third or fourth round pick, hard to justify investing in another one this year. And at number 26 on the list, the Tennessee Titans. With Will Levis entering his second year, coming off a rookie season with encouraging flashes, veteran backup Mason Rudolph now on board, and even Malik Willis under contract for 2 more years, seems unlikely that a rebuilding team with no third rounder would earmark much more to the position right now. Next, we look at some teams that may be looking at quarterback drafting for some more depth at that position there, starting with number 25, the Houston Texans. Reigning Offensive Rookie of the Year, C.J. Stroud, is the paragon of quarterback draft pick success, an instant superstar who would arguably have his team least in need to draft another if he had a lengthier body of work or a backup who was under contract in 2025 when Davis Mills and Case Keenum are both scheduled to reach free agency. So that's number 25. Moving to number 24, we see the Indianapolis Colts. Fairly similar situation to division rival Houston, with talented second-year man Anthony Richardson at the reins, with Flacco and Sam Erlinger in reserve for 2024 anyway. Number 23 on the list, the Baltimore Ravens. Coming off his second league MVP, no questions about 27-year-old Lamar Jackson, other than his propensity to get banged up. And with Huntley moving on, the backstops are Josh Johnson, age 37, and Malik Cunningham, age 25, neither offering especially meaningful NFL game experience. Number 22 on the list, the San Francisco 49ers. Brock Purdy, who finished 4th in the MVP voting in his first year as a full-time starter, is going to be here a while and cannot even talk about a long-term extension until 2025. Backups Joshua Dobbs and Brandon Allen may not stay beyond this season. Number 21 on the list of teams that may or may not need to draft a new quarterback, the Los Angeles Chargers. They are locked and loaded with Justin Herbert, but only have understudies Easton Stick and Max Dugan locked up through this season. Number 20 on the list, the Cincinnati Bengals. Given how effectively Jake Browning played in injured Joe Burrow's stead late last season, Cincinnati looks fairly well set, aside from needing a camp arm or two. Number 19 on the list, the Atlanta Falcons. Like the Bengals, they are now settled at starter, recently signing Kirk Cousins, and with second-string quarterback Taylor Heinicke signed for another year. But the Dirty Birds will need more than that, at least in terms of getting through spring workouts, training camp, and preseason. Number 18 on the list of those in need with quarterbacks, the Carolina Panthers. For better or worse, they are tied to Bryce Young for the foreseeable future. Yet this is another roster that will need more bodies to get by in the near term than merely Young and backup veteran Andy Dalton, age 36. Number 17 on the list, Jacksonville Jaguars. Coming off of a disappointing, injury-riddled campaign, Trevor Lawrence is nevertheless in line for a significant extension. C.J. Beathard and now Mac Jones are in the bullpen, though both are likely to be free agents in 2025. Next is number 16 on the list, the Detroit Lions. Coming off the team's best season of the Super Bowl era, that is, since the year 1966, Jared Goff is in line for a significant extension heading into his walk year. Nate Sudfeld remains as a backup, provided that he is not displaced by 2023 third-rounder Hendon Hooker, who's now healthy enough to begin tapping into his estimable potential. Next, at number 15 on the list, the Miami Dolphins. Coming off his first Pro Bowl campaign, Tua Tagovailoa is also in line for a significant extension, yet given his litany of injuries, the Finns could maybe do better than current backups Mike White and Skylar Thompson. Number 14 on the list of those looking for a new quarterback, the Green Bay Packers. Coming off of a breakout effort during his first year as the Packers starter, Jordan Love is, yes, in line for a lucrative extension. For whatever it's worth, backups Sean Clifford and Alex Mago have combined to throw one regular season pass. Ever. Next, we look at number 13 on the list, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They committed to Baker Mayfield for three more years this offseason, but will likely have to rethink their contingency plans for 2025 when Kyle Trask and John Wolford will be free agents. And next we look at a category of the teams who may draft a quarterback in the first round if the right circumstances arise, starting with the New York Jets. Aaron Rodgers has a very serious recent injury. Tyrod Taylor has a very lengthy injury history, though clearly in the win-now mode for the year 2024, the New York Jets have to consider value given that they're pretty much year-to-year at the quarterback position. Nearly unfathomable that general manager Joe Douglas would take a passer at number 10, but with no second-round pick this year, a high-end developmental prospect like South Carolina's Spencer Rattler would be a logical luxury if he slides far enough. Then there's the team with the number 11 overall pick in the first round, the Dallas Cowboys. Believe it, like the Jets, the reigning NFC East champs, and head coach Mike McCarthy most assuredly need to survive deep into the 2024 postseason. As things stand now, Dak Prescott, Trey Lance, and Cooper Rush could all be free agents next year. Team Brass apparently content to allow Prescott to play out his very hefty contract. Hard to believe that Jerry Jones moves up for a quarterback, but he may also have to decide whether or not to pass on players like Washington's Michael Penix Jr. and or Oregon's Bo Nix. Number 10 on the list, the Los Angeles Rams. If Matthew Stafford watch is not an annual thing already, it will be soon. Newly signed Jimmy Garoppolo is among the best backups in the league, but not a long-term fallback. Stetson Bennett IV missed virtually all of his rookie season for undisclosed reasons, while Dresser Wynn rounds out the group. It would be a surprise if general manager Les Snead used his first-round pick in 8 years on a quarterback, but not so much if he rolls the dice on someone who is too intriguing to bypass on day two. Number 10 on the list, the Seattle Seahawks. They have to do something. It's just a matter of how much and when. Geno Smith and Sam Howell combined to start 32 games in 2023, Howell with Washington, and both are under contract for the next two seasons. While the Seahawks, who tend to roll light at the quarterback depth chart, will need help at least to get through the summer, they'll also have to consider outright upgrades given Team Brass's fairly lukewarm commitment to Smith this offseason. Seattle currently has no second-round pick, though Schneider tends to move around the board frequently. Former Huskies star Penix is one who might hold significant intrigue given the Seahawks just hired Ryan Grubb, Penix's offensive coordinator during his past 2 years at the University of Washington. Next team on the list is the Pittsburgh Steelers, number 8 in the draft. They have got plenty to sort through given the recent arrivals of Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, and Kyle Allen to a completely revamped depth chart. Seemingly little need to add a rookie to this mix, aside from the fact that, similar to Dallas's situation, the entire trio of quarterbacks could be gone in a year. Number 7 on the list, the New York Giants. They are in a fascinating spot, literally and figuratively. With the 6th overall pick, a player like Michigan's J.J. McCarthy or North Carolina's Drake May might fall to New York, and or if Big Blue targets one of them or LSU's Jaden Daniels, they wouldn't have far to move up, though hard to see them and Washington coming to the table over the number 2 selection. Yet coming off an ACL injury and season when he played behind a poor line and without any bona fide weapons aside from now-departed running back Saquon Barkley, what happens with Daniel Jones as he enters the second season of a 4-year, $160 million pact? With veteran Drew Locke and NFL sophomore Tommy DeVito also on the roster, it seems like the Giants will either make a huge splash behind center or else barely a ripple. Then number 6 on the list, the Las Vegas Raiders. New head coach Antonio Pierce's love for and ties to Daniels when both were at Arizona State are apparent and reciprocated. but the silver and black would have to pay a king's ransom to move up from number 13 to get him. Penix or Nix seemed like more realistic options if the Raiders stick and pick in number 1, though after adding Gardner Minshew in free agency, new GM Tom Telesco doesn't have to make an extravagant trade for, say, McCarthy or Daniels, much as if it seems Pierce wants him to. And finally, we go to the top 5 teams with quarterbacks a high priority come this NFL draft coming up. Number 5, the New England Patriots. Jacoby Brissett is a proven career backup, and Bailey Zapp has a chance to reach that threshold. Said another way, the Patriots are still seeking Tom Brady's long-term successor, and the only reason not to take a shot in round 1 is if Elliott Wolf decides that a roster that didn't support departed Mac Jones just isn't ready to rally around another rookie anytime soon. Number 4 on the list, the Minnesota Vikings. Retread Nick Mullins and rookie Jaren Hall were among the fill-ins for now-departed Cousins in 2023, and their collective performance helped necessitate the signing of Sam Darnold as a stopgap. The Vikings seem poised to move up for a long-term solution after acquiring the draft's 23rd overall pick, adding it to their organic first-rounder, number 11, even though the roster is largely in good position to win immediately. But to be determined who might be on Minnesota's board and or if general manager Kwesi Aldofemensa can get into position for the player or players that he covets. Next on the list, number 3, the Denver Broncos. Both the Broncos head coach and GM freely admit that they need to add to a room that currently includes journeyman Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci, neither signed for 2025, and they probably need to import multiple passers. Currently, with only one draft pick among the top 75, this franchise faces quite a decision entering the 2024 season, and that probably means whether to gamble on someone who is probably rated no better than this draft's fourth best quarterback, or to essentially punt on a season effectively already crippled by the $85 million salary cap charge incurred by the March release of Russell Wilson. And next, number 2 on the list, the Washington Commanders. Much as some teams might desire their number 2 overall slot, hard to fathom a world where new general manager Adam Peters does not wind up with Daniels, May, or McCarthy as the new face of this resetting franchise. Currently on the roster, Marcus Mariota, Jeff Driscoll, and Jake Fromm are all backup caliber guys on one-year deals. And finally, number 1 in the draft circuit, the Chicago Bears. No drama here. Fields is gone. Undrafted Tyson Badgett and peripatetic Brett Rypien are currently the only quarterbacks on the roster. Former Southern Cal star and 2022 Heisman Trophy winner Caleb is expected to join right after the draft officially starts on April the 25th. And that brings us to the next feature, which is headlined, How Do Two Elite Quarterbacks Compare? We asked a Huskies defender. This feature is written by Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press, Dateline, Indianapolis. Caleb Williams is widely considered the best quarterback prospect in the 2024 NFL Draft, but one defensive back who played against Williams and J.J. McCarthy said that the ex-Michigan football quarterback is on par with Williams. "I think he's very close," Washington safety Dom Hampton told the Free Press at the NFL Combine. Quote, "He's throwing at the combine, so you're going to be able to see more of what he's able to do. Just with the system that he had, he was handing the ball off a lot more often. He had good running backs, great O-line, so you'll be able to see more of what he has to offer at the combine, but he can also throw the ball very well," unquote. McCarthy is generally viewed as the number four quarterback prospect in the draft, behind Williams, LSU's Jaden Daniels, and North Carolina's Drake May. Williams is projected to go number one overall to the Chicago Bears, or whoever they trade the pick to, while McCarthy could interest quarterback-needy teams like the Atlanta Falcons, who are drafting number eight for now, or the Minnesota Vikings drafting number 11, and the Denver Broncos number 12 in the top half of the first round. McCarthy was a two-year starter who led Michigan to the national championship last season, but he attempted far fewer passes in his career than Williams or Daniels or May. He had the highest completion percentage of the top quarterback prospects last season, and tied Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner, for the fewest interceptions with four. "He is an acquired taste, because when I watched him, first of all, you're watching TV and you're like, gosh, they don't ask him to do much," NFL Network analyst Daniel Jeremiah said recently. "They run the ball. They play great defense. He'll manage the game and kind of get them through it and make a couple plays here and there. But when you dig into the tape and you really watch it, and then you watch on third downs where they've got to throw the ball and they do put the ball in his hands, there is a lot to like about him," unquote. Hampton, a three-year starter for Washington, had 10 tackles in the Huskies' November win over Southern Cal 52-42, and 10 tackles and a pass breakup in Washington's 34-13 championship game loss to the Wolverines. Williams was 27 of 35 passing for 312 yards with three touchdowns and no interceptions against Washington. McCarthy was 10 of 18 for 140 yards with no touchdowns against the Huskies. Williams is considered one of the best quarterback prospects in recent years, with a strong arm and dynamic running ability. Hampton said that McCarthy is, quote, "more athletic than a lot of people give him credit for, and accurate as well. They're both very good quarterbacks and very talented," he said. Caleb Williams is going to make you cover all 53 yards of the width of the field, and he's going to take deep shots, probably about 60-70-yard arm, so you definitely have to worry about the deep ball. Same with J.J., more off-play action and getting our safeties coming downhill, so we had to deal with that in the national championship game, trying to stop the run with the combination of stopping the deep pass. But both quarterbacks are very talented," unquote. And again, that feature is entitled, "How Do Two Elite Quarterbacks Compare?" We asked a Washington Huskies defender. This feature written by Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press. And from the college football world, let's turn now to the baseball world, where we have a good feature entitled Dodgers Legend Also Was a Human Rights Icon. This feature is written by Dana Hunslinger Benbow of the Indianapolis Star. Carl Erskine, a fierce fighter for human rights and all-star for the Brooklyn Dodgers, who pitched one of the greatest World Series games in history, died on April 16th after a brief illness, his family confirmed to Indy Star. He was 97 years old. Erskine died a baseball legend who played alongside baseball field icons Jackie Robinson and Gil Hodges. He pitched in 5 World Series, striking out a then record 14 in a game in 1953. Erskine, who played for the Dodgers from 1948 to 1959, would become beloved by the fans. They affectionately called him Oisk in their Brooklyn accents. But to those who knew him best, Erskine was so much more. He was a man who, off the field, fought for what was right in the world. Erskine was a fierce champion of human rights, racial equality, and when his late son Jimmy was born with Down syndrome, became immersed in fighting for people with special needs. "He was the best guy I've ever known," said filmmaker Ted Green, who produced a documentary on Erskine entitled The Best We've Got, The Carl Erskine Story. Erskine was born at home in the year 1926, the son of a stay-at-home mom and a father who was a grocery store manager and later a factory worker. He grew up in what he called a mixed neighborhood in Anderson, Indiana. As a kid, Erskine loved playing basketball, and there was a court in a back alley that sat empty waiting for kids who had finished their chores after school or who had gotten up early enough to play as the sun rose. Erskine went there every chance he got. It was the 1930s in Anderson, where 10 years before, the Ku Klux Klan had a stronghold, as it did across the state and much of the nation. Racism was rampant as Erskine came to that court in 1937, a 10-year-old white boy with nothing to prove, just to play. And with every societal force pushing Carl in another direction, here on a basketball court in a back alley, he befriends a 9-year-old Johnny, said Green. Johnny was, quote-unquote, Jumpin' Johnny Wilson, as he later became known in Anderson, a high school basketball superstar who, along with Erskine, wowed crowds of more than 5,000 at the Wigwam Gym. Erskine and Wilson, who was black, became more than teammates. They became best friends. The two were joined at the hip. They walked to school together every day and hung out after school. They played sports together and told each other their deepest secrets. Erskine didn't realize it at the time, but Wilson would shape his views on race. And later in his life, someone would notice that. Erskine was in the Brooklyn Dodgers locker room when he heard a guy come up behind him, Erskine told Indy Star back in 2015. Quote, "Hey, Erskine, how come you don't have a problem with this black and white thing?" Unquote. The voice belonged to Dodgers teammate Jackie Robinson. "I said, well, I grew up with Johnny Wilson," Erskine recalled. "I didn't know he was black. He was my buddy, and so I don't have a problem," unquote. Erskine had been playing baseball his entire life in those days before television and video games. He and his dad would go in the yard and play catch. At age 9, a team asked Erskine to play in the Anderson Parks City League. He pitched on a regular-sized diamond. There wasn't Little League back then. Erskine made a name for himself as a high school baseball player in Indiana, striking kids out, pitching no-hitters, being written about in newspapers. He wasn't very big, 5'10" and 165 pounds, but he had an arm. After graduating in 1945, Erskine worked out for the Dodgers at Ebbets Field. He couldn't sign because he had to serve his time in the Navy due to World War II. When the war ended the following year, Erskine signed with the Dodgers at the age of 19. At a preseason game in Fort Worth, Texas in 1948, Erskine pitched 4 or 5 innings against Robinson as he was trying to make the big leagues. And lo and behold, when the game was over, Jackie Robinson actually came over to our dugout and he said, "Where's Erskine?" I didn't know Jackie, and I stepped out and shook hands with him. And he said, "Young man, I hit against you twice today. You're not going to be here very long," unquote. Robinson was right. Just a dozen games later, Erskine was called up to the Dodgers. When he checked in and went to his locker, Robinson walked up to him. Jackie said, "I told you you couldn't miss," Erskine said. Robinson, Erskine, and their young Dodgers team would add to an exciting era of baseball in Brooklyn. After losing 7 consecutive World Series over the years, the franchise won its first title in 1955. The Dodgers were made up of icons from that era: Robinson, Hodges, Pee Wee Reese, Roy Campanella, Preacher Rowe, Duke Snyder, and Carl Furillo. We had a team that, in my 12 seasons in the big leagues, won the National League Championship 6 times, Erskine said. Erskine became a regular in the team's starting rotation in 1951. In addition to pitching in 5 World Series, he pitched 2 no-hitters, the first in 1952 against the Cubs. He also led the National League with 20 wins in 1953. Erskine pitched the first nationally televised no-hitter in 1956 against the Giants. It was the Saturday game of the week at a time that the nation gathered around their televisions to watch. The Brooklyn era of the Dodgers came to an end in 1958, shocking and saddening a city when the team announced that it would be moving to Los Angeles. Erskine pitched the home opener in L.A. Dodger Stadium wasn't built yet, so the team played in a football stadium and 80,000 people were in the stands. It was a big historic moment for L.A. to have Major League Baseball, he said. "I did get the win that day against the Giants, and that sort of ties me to L.A. after playing most of my career in Brooklyn. When I go back to L.A., it seems as though the fans accept me as if I played my whole career there. It's pretty neat," unquote. Erskine retired from baseball in 1959 and returned to Indiana, where he and Betty would raise their 3 children, Danny, Gary, and Susan. 1 year later, Jimmy was born. Jimmy Erskine was born in 1960 with Down syndrome. It was a time when many doctors told parents that babies with Down syndrome should be sent to an institution, that they would be a societal hindrance, that they would disrupt family life. Erskine and his wife, Betty, ignored what doctors said, and they took Jimmy home. They were not going to do what other families had done before. They raised Jimmy just as they did their other three children. Quote, they let him fly. They took Jimmy out with them wherever they went, to church, to restaurants, said Green. It was always Jimmy was there, and if he acted up, he acted up, unquote, just like every other kid acts up. Green says that the Erskines blazed a trail for other families with children who had special needs. They showed quietly through their actions how to raise a child with intellectual disabilities. But Erskine didn't just make life better for Jimmy. He took to another fight, a fight to make lives better for all people with special needs. He was a fierce advocate for educational opportunities and for Special Olympics. Carl Erskine has helped to effect such massive change through humility, through grace, through human leadership, said Green. He has spent his lifetime propping up others, unquote. At the time that Jimmy was born, average life expectancy for babies with Down syndrome was 10 years. Jimmy Erskine would outlive his Down syndrome prognosis by decades and, along the way, became the face of Special Olympics. He died in 1923 at the age of 63. Whenever Erskine was asked to give a speech as a World Series champ, he would stand at the podium and hold up his World Series ring and tell the audience how much it meant to him. But then he would always pull from his pocket one of Jimmy's gold medals from the Special Olympics. Quote, you tell me which is the greater achievement, Erskine would say to the audience, which of these means more, unquote. The crowd would go silent, Green said. Then they would clap, and then the tears would fall. And again, that feature is entitled, Dodgers Legend Also Was a Human Rights Icon, a remembrance of Carl Erskine. And here is another baseball remembrance. Headline reads, Hall of Fame manager led Cardinals to the 1982 series title. This feature written by Steve Gardner of USA Today. Baseball Hall of Fame manager Whitey Herzog, who led the St. Louis Cardinals to the 1982 World Series title, has died at the age of 92. Herzog's death was mourned last week by statements from his family, the Cardinals, and Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred. As a manager who built offenses in both St. Louis and Kansas City that relied heavily on speed, pitching, and defense, Herzog was chosen by the Hall of Fame Veterans Committee for induction into Cooperstown in the year 2010 after serving as manager for four teams over 18 seasons and compiling an overall record of 1,281 wins, 1,125 losses. Whitey and his teams played a big part in changing the direction of the Cardinals franchise in the early 1980s with an exciting style of play that would become known as Whitey Ball throughout baseball, says Cardinals chairman and CEO Bill DeWitt Jr. Whitey loved the Cardinals, their fans, and St. Louis. He will be sorely missed, unquote. Born Darrell Norman Elvert Herzog in New Athens, Illinois, Herzog was a star baseball and basketball player in high school who chose to sign with the New York Yankees instead of going to college. According to his SABR biography, Herzog acquired the name Whitey while in the Yankees farm system because his light blonde hair bore a resemblance to another pitcher, Bob White Rat Kuzava. Herzog eventually reached the majors in 1956 after he was traded to the Washington Senators, playing what would be a career-high 117 games as an outfielder and first baseman. He played 8 seasons in the majors, hitting .257 with 25 home runs and 172 RBIs for the Senators, the Kansas City Athletics, the Baltimore Orioles, and Detroit Tigers before retiring as a player in 1963. Herzog got his first managerial job 10 years later, succeeding Ted Williams as skipper of the Texas Rangers. He lasted less than one season before he was fired and replaced by Billy Martin. Herzog was the interim manager for the California Angels for 4 games in 1974 before taking over the Kansas City Royals in the middle of the 1975 season. He went on to have a successful stint in Kansas City, guiding the Royals to 3 division titles and a second place finish in 4 full seasons from 1976 to 1979. However, Herzog saved his greatest success for St. Louis. He managed the Cardinals for 73 games in 1980 before being promoted to general manager. But he returned to the dugout for the 1981 season while still retaining his duties as GM. Under Herzog, the Cardinals returned to the playoffs in 1982, winning the National League pennant and defeating the Milwaukee Brewers in 7 games in the World Series. He also piloted the Cardinals to World Series appearances in 1985 when he was named National League Manager of the Year, and in 1987, but the Cardinals lost in 7 games both times. Herzog returned to the front office one last time, serving as the Angels' general manager in 1992 and 1993. When he stepped down, it ended his 45-year association with baseball as a player, coach, manager, and executive. Whitey Herzog was one of the most accomplished managers of his generation and a consistent winner with both I-70 franchises. He made a significant impact on the St. Louis Cardinals as both a manager and a general manager, with the Kansas City Royals as a manager, and with the New York Mets in player development, Manfred said in a statement. Herzog was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame for his accomplishments as a manager, entering Cooperstown as part of the class of 2010. And from baseball news, let's turn back over to some NFL draft news. Here's a feature that is written by Michael Middlehurst Schwartz of USA Today. Headline reads, 7 college standouts in line for a long wait in the NFL draft. The NFL draft will be shaped by several marquee names, including Southern Cal's Caleb Williams, Ohio State's Marvin Harrison Jr., and Michigan's J.J. McCarthy. Yet there are plenty of other all-conference and all-American selections who will be left to become late-round picks or undrafted free agents. As the 2024 NFL Draft kicks off this week, keep an eye on these 7 notable figures who could be in for an extended wait before they are picked, starting with Jordan Travis, quarterback with Florida State. A sixth-year senior in 2023, Travis made the most of his extra time by notching an 11-win, 0-loss mark with the Florida Seminoles before being sidelined by a leg fracture in November. That injury undoubtedly complicated his pro outlook, but he likely was already facing an uphill battle to stick in the NFL for the long term. At 6'1" and 200 pounds with arm strength that is passable at best, Travis doesn't have many starting caliber traits to develop, but he also lacks the pocket composure and anticipation skills one would seek in a trustworthy backup. That all leaves a player who will be 24 years old as a rookie in a tough spot for the draft. Travis has shown enough to hear his name called at some point, but it seems like a long shot to happen before the final few rounds. Then there's the name Sam Hartman, quarterback with Notre Dame. The highlight of Hartman's pre-draft process has been the visual of his hair flowing through the air during his 40-yard at the NFL scouting combine. Not a great sign when that's the biggest buzz that a quarterback prospect creates. Despite finishing his six-year career as one of the most prolific passers in college football history, Hartman doesn't seem like he'll warrant much more than a late-round flyer. Next on the list is Cody Schrader, a running back from Missouri. That the former walk-on made it onto the pro radar at all should be considered a triumph. After transferring from Truman State, Schrader broke out in 2023 with a 1,600-yard, 14-touchdown campaign that earned him first-team All-American honors. Still, it's hard to sell NFL teams on a 5'9", 214-pound back who lacks the long speed or agility to consistently break big plays. Schrader's determined approach should help him stick on a roster early in his career as a physical runner who could be a significant special teams asset. But he'll again be playing the role of the long shot as a likely late day three pick. Then there's Tavonte Sweat, defensive tackle for Texas. The 6'4", 366-pound man in the middle for Texas became college football's latest supersized presence, winning the Outland Trophy and being named a unanimous All-American last fall. Sweat is truly a force and demands an offense account for his ability to move blockers backward and hold his ground. He's far from the current prototype at defensive tackle, but the appeal of adding a singular defensive presence up front should be readily apparent. Next on the list, we see Tommy Eichenberg, a linebacker for Ohio State. A two-time first-team All-Big Ten selection, Eichenberg set the tone for the Buckeyes' defense as a two-year starter and team captain, racking up 200 tackles in that span. He is at his best when diagnosing run plays and meeting the ball carrier in the hole, as he is a reliable tackler whenever in position to make the play. But coverage is another matter for the 6'2", 233-pounder who looks out of sorts when he is asked to drop back. Eichenberg might gain a better feel for the nuances of operating in zone with some additional work, but it likely will never be one of his strengths. Those overall fluidity problems likely signal a middle-round landing spot. Then there is Jeremiah Trotter Jr., linebacker for Clemson. it didn't take long before the son of four-time Pro Bowl linebacker and former Philadelphia Eagles standout Jeremiah Trotter stepped out of his father's shadow. The 6-foot-even, 228-pounder made his mark at Clemson as a consistent downhill playmaker, collecting nearly 180 tackles with 28 tackles for loss and 12 sacks over his 2 years as a starter. Finishing plays against the run might prove more difficult at the next level, as his range is not extensive and he can be too easily shaken in space. And while his instincts could help him become a solid contributor in zone coverage, he could be exposed in man-to-man matchups. The middle round seemed like a sensible starting point for his pro career. And finally, we have Kalen King, a cornerback for Penn State. At this point last year, King earned premature buzz of a potential top 50 pick thanks to his hyper-competitive style and impressive ball production. He had 21 passes defensed in 2022. Then the 5'11", 190-pound cornerback suffered several shaky outings, including one in a showcase matchup with Ohio State wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. The disappointing season heightened concerns about King lacking the recovery speed to replicate his playmaking prowess at the next level. His struggles at the Senior Bowl and 4.6 second 40-yard dash at the NFL Scouting Combine further sunk his stock. Being dropped into a zone-heavy scheme or moving to safety could help hide some of his shortcomings, but he has to become a much more composed player when working downhill, particularly as a tackler. The middle of day 3 seems like a reasonable range. And again, this feature is entitled 7 College Standouts in Line for a Long Wait in the NFL Draft, written by Michael Middlehurst Schwartz of USA Today. And that's all the time that we have for this week's reading of Sports Today. Again, my name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great Thursday evening.